20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everyone. It is Wednesday, April 15th. We are just over a week away from the NFL Draft. Pack-A-Day Podcast is here to bring that to you, some draft coverage. And tonight we are talking about the Big Uglies, which I don't necessarily appreciate that nickname as a former Big Ugly, I guess, but that's what they call them. So we have offensive linemen again tonight. Last week we had interior. Tonight we have exterior. I'm your host this evening. I am Jacob Westendorf, and I am joined again this week by Russell Brown. Russ, how are we hanging in?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I have to fight you because you shared the trouble with the snap crap that
suck, bro.
Hey, I'm just telling you, who's won three of the last four games between those two teams? I just look it up. I'm not the one who's there, but it's okay. Mel Tucker will do great things for them, I'm sure.
How's your trips to Indy going? Just let me know.
Yeah, that's fine. If anybody beats Ohio State, then we'll get into that one of these days. I guess Michigan State did that, what, like 5 years ago?
I mean, a lot sooner than Michigan.
Well, Michigan hasn't beaten them since I was like a baby or something like that. So I don't even talk about those kinds of things. I'm not even kidding you, Russ. I did not watch Michigan Ohio State this past year because what's the point? So
yeah,
we could do that. We could do this all night. So that is what it is. I am joined also by Owen Reese, who does not give a damn about our Michigan State talk. Owen, how are we doing?
I'm doing well, man. I was going to say, imagine talking about a team that goes to Indianapolis with any type of regularity.
Oh, yeah, I suppose. I think Wisconsin has probably been – well, I mean
– no team has earned the right to lose in Indianapolis to Ohio State more often
than Wisconsin has. That's kind of the way that we have to flex here in the Big Ten, I guess, because, yeah, it really is Ohio State and everybody else after that. So – that's the sad state of the Big Ten. That's not what we're here to talk about tonight, though. We do have some players from the Big Ten, which we will discuss, but we do have offensive tackles tonight. So before we get into the draft class, I kind of want to go over the state of the Packers offensive line that they have at their tackle position. Some turnover this offseason. Brian Bulaga from Iowa is out, and Ricky Wagner is in. And David Bakhtiari, of course, is going to be the left tackle as well. Jared Veld here remains a free agent, which is strange, just because I know that there was some buzz at the combine that multiple teams had talked to him. If multiple teams are talking to you, I would imagine that you'd have a deal in place by now. But I mean, granted, I don't know what the situation of those talks are. So that's interesting nonetheless. First, what I want to ask you guys is, going into 2021, the big discussion obviously is about the Packers free agents: Kevin King, Aaron Jones, Corey Linsley, David Bakhtiari, and Kenny Clark. Now, most people would say that David Bakhtiari is either one or two on that list in terms of players the Packers have to re-sign. I just wanted to see, with that list I just gave you guys, Owen, I'll start with you. Where does Bakhtiari fall on that? Is he ahead of Kenny Clark or just behind him?
I think he's probably just behind him. I mean, Kenny Clark is, like, I'm you won't find any defender of offensive lineman bigger than me, but Kenny Clark is a special talent who's 24 years old. David Bakhtiari is nearing 30. And he's still very good, and the value of an elite left tackle is not lost on me. But for the long-term sake of this franchise, Kenny Clark, I think, has to be the priority. He's a rising star in the league as a defensive lineman, someone who's only going to continue to get better. So to me, he's younger. He's probably, quote-unquote, more talented at this point in his career than Bakhtiari is. So to me, I think that's got to be Kenny Clark.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's some urgency, if you will, to get a deal done with Clark this offseason. Gutekunst talked about wanting to get one of those things done, and I think if they do that, the Packers haven't used their franchise tag since 2010 when they did it on Ryan Pickett. I think that's a possibility that they use it on him here, David Bakhtiari, that is, if they're not able to get a deal done. Quite frankly, I mean, Owen, you mentioned it. Tackles cost a lot of money, but there's a reason for that. They're worth it, and we'll talk about that as we kind of progress through this show. Russ, are you kind of in lockstep there? Do you think Bakhtiari's a priority right there with Kenny Clark, but just a smidge behind?
Yeah, I mean, I want it to be different, and I want it to go the route of left tackle, but at the same time, I mean, I have to follow my golden rule of, you know, when you get a player approaching the age of 30 or above 30, proceed with caution. So I really like Kenny Clark. He was a player of mine a few years back that I was really excited about when he was coming out of the draft. I wasn't expecting this type of climb for him in the NFL to become kind of this rising star that he has. But, yeah, no, he's certainly their top priority moving forward. But, yeah, you know, Bakhtiari is certainly right there as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's 30. It's crazy to think that Kenny Clark is 6 full years younger than David Bakhtiari. That's just really strange for me to think, because it feels like both of them have been in Green Bay for quite some time. The other side of the offensive line, certainly not as solid as the left side is. The right tackle position has some turnover. Rick Wagner was signed by Green Bay this offseason after being cut by Detroit. So, Rush, you can probably give us some insight into the type of player he is. I know that the biggest complaint in Detroit was kind of his contract situation. So Green Bay did get him on a nicer contract than the one that Brian Bulaga got. But I mean, I guess I can't speak for how you guys feel, but Brian Bulaga, in my opinion, is a much better player. So they also paid less, but they also got less on the same side of things. What kind of player is Green Bay getting in Wagner? Is this somebody that they can expect to hold down the fort for a full year, or should they be looking at potential replacements now?
I mean, I don't think it's out of the ordinary, and I think it's not a bad thing to be looking at a future right tackle. I mean, Wagner's well over 30 years of age. He's had some injury history over the last 2 to 3 years, just playing through injury and things like that. He has missed some time with injuries. I don't know the exact number, but again, for a guy that when he was with Detroit, he had the big contract, and he wasn't just playing up to par for that contract. And that's where the issue lied with Detroit fans. He missed quite a few blocks on a Sunday afternoon. It was very evident when he did because his quarterback was getting killed. But at the same time, I think you can certainly expect him to, I think, rejuvenate himself for probably at least this year, have a pretty solid year in front of him, and then you can move forward. Maybe not necessarily next year, but look into this draft for a future right tackle. If you don't feel comfortable at, let's say, pick 62 or pick 94 for a right tackle at that point, then I don't think there's anything against that. So, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm for them to be looking at a futuristic
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So Green Bay, obviously, not as set as they have been. I mean, it's been bookend tackles, it feels like, for 20 years. I mean, it was Clifton and Tauscher, and then it was Clifton and Bulaga, and then it was Bakhtiari and Bulaga, and now there's a little bit of a transition. So, Owen, something that has been discussed, and maybe Green Bay has a little bit of a shift in their thinking, and they value the depth along their offensive line a little bit more than they have in the past, but Lane Taylor was somebody who was seen as a potential cap casualty. It was almost like a given, almost as much as Jimmy Graham was a given. He was replaced last year by Elgton Jenkins when he was injured. Even before he was injured, they were kind of doing this weird rotation thing, which I didn't particularly understand or care for, but it's what they were doing. And eventually Jenkins became the starter. Billy Turner has a high salary. He'll be a starter, but Lane Taylor's still on this roster. And there's a couple different theories for that. One, maybe Green Bay's looking at Lane Taylor and Billy Turner in a competition as far as who could be the starting right guard. I don't know how much I buy into that, but that's a possibility. The other one is that if Rick Wagner is a disaster, they're not paying him a whole lot, and sitting him on the bench isn't going to hurt you the same way that it would someone like Billy Turner. So is it possible that Lane Taylor takes a guard spot and one of Billy Turner or Elgton Jenkins becomes the right tackle?
I don't think Elgton Jenkins would be the right tackle, to be honest. He hasn't played tackle since he was a freshman at Mississippi State. I think it would probably be more likely that if, in the case of an injury, I think, first of all, Lane Taylor is like a really solid third guard to have. I'm not convinced that he's not a better offensive lineman than Billy Turner, but he isn't going to start a right guard over Turner, I don't think. It would be more likely in the fact that if Wagner struggles, Billy Turner does have that history of playing tackle. With that said, I think there's a reason that he plays guard rather than tackle. But for the sake of this argument, I think that it would be more likely that Taylor be a emergency right guard, with Turner being an emergency right tackle, rather than them truly competing for the right guard spot or anyone else playing right tackle for that matter.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that Green Bay had chances last year to put Billy Turner at right tackle. And whenever Bulaga got dinged or left a game with an injury, they never moved Turner over. So I think that they've kind of told you how they feel about him as well. But it was a talking point, so we brought it up. Guys, this is probably, it's in the top three for sure in terms of needs on the Packers is offensive tackle. Like I mentioned, Wagner's probably a stopgap. Bakhtiari on an expiring contract. At minimum, they're probably replacing one of those players next year, if not both. Offensive tackle, linebacker, wide receiver. That seems to be the consensus in terms of needs along the Packers team. But tonight we're talking tackles. So we discussed before the show, our consensus is that the top four is the same. We might have them in a little slightly different order, but the top four is Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs, Mekhi Becton, and Andrew Thomas out of Georgia. Those are the four guys that we have in the top four. It's unlikely that any of those four guys drop to Green Bay. In fact, it's actually more likely that all four of them get picked inside of the top 10 than one of them drops to 30 at this point. Although there was some interesting chatter today from Jeff Risden. One of his bold predictions was that Andrew Thomas gets pushed down the board a little bit because of his upside. And some of the guys like Austin Jackson, Josh Jones, Ezra Cleveland might be some of those guys that get pushed up ahead of him. But Owen, I'll start with you. So if those are the big four, if you will, tackles 5, 6, 7, those are the guys that are more likely to be in Green Bay's range for players that could they could pick in the first round. So with that in mind, who is your tackle 5, 5 and 6? We'll leave it at that simple.
Oh, yeah, and I think, truthfully, the guys at 5 through 7 for me are probably, unfortunately for us, more of the Packers type at tackle than the first four are. My tackle 5 is actually Austin Jackson from USC. Tackle 6, very close. I had some issues separating these two, was Josh Jones from Houston. And then tackle 7 is actually Lucas Niang from TCU, with then Ezra Cleveland also, again, being very close to Niang. So I think that's kind of the next group. Niang, maybe a bit more than the other three, a bit more of a power guy, but the other Jackson, Cleveland, and Jones, all very much premier athletes at the position. And I regret to say, or probably a bit more project status for the three of them as well at the position moving forward.
Yeah, Niang is somebody that I like. I'm curious to see what the medical situation on him is. That seems to be the big one. But I watched his tape against Ohio State from 2 years ago, and he's facing Nick Bosa and Chase Young, and he held up relatively well. I mean, sure, he got beat on a couple plays, but it's also Nick Bosa and Chase Young, the number 2 overall pick, and most likely back-to-back drafts. But, okay, so those are your guys. Russ, who do you have hanging in there 5 through 7? A little interesting that Owen had Ezra Cleveland just outside of that group. He seems to be a name that's becoming a bit of a darling.
Yeah, my list is relatively close. I mean, it's right there. I've got Austin Jackson as the 5th offensive tackle. I've been extremely high on him since pretty much November. I think certainly him going in the first round seems pretty certain at this point. It's just where. He's got all the tools. He's only 20, 21 years of age, and he played an entire season after missing all of the offseason after a bone marrow surgery to give to his sister. So, I mean, for him to not really have a true recovery and to kind of have the season that he did, I think kind of one tells you about his toughness, but also really just the natural ability that he has. He wasn't great, but he was not terrible. He was, I thought, good. So I like him. 6 would be Lucas. I love the fit. I'm kind of curious if, you know, the wide receiver that they would be interested in, let's say at 30, if he wasn't there, do they just pull the trigger, or do they move back, get a couple of extra picks, and then take Lucas Niang? I think it'd be a great fit. You know, you mentioned the hip injury. Well, if Rick Wagner's kind of that stopgap for a year, then I think that could be the fit, because he's a perfect fit in his own scheme. They ran that a ton at TCU. I love his ability in space. I think he's got, you know, good length. I think he's got relatively good grip strength. So then I like him. But then after that, it's Ezra Cleveland for me, just the natural athletic ability. I think he's a pretty smooth technician. I like his patience. I think he does a really good job just waiting to deliver his punch. He doesn't really rush into anything. He lets the defensive lineman come to him. And I really like that out of a guy, because that doesn't necessarily lead to oversetting and things like that. So Yeah, those are my three guys.
Let's just say then now moving forward that Green Bay doesn't take a tackle at 30. And I certainly think that that's one of the favorites as far as a position for them to take. But at the same time, I also don't think that Brian Gutekunst is going to just pigeonhole himself into saying, okay, I'm taking a tackle in round one, a receiver in round two, and a cornerback in round three, just for example's sake. That being said, if they don't take one at 30, they are going to take an offensive lineman at some point in this draft. I told you guys last week right here on the show, I expect Green Bay to come up away with this draft with two, maybe three offensive linemen if they keep all 10 of their picks. That certainly wouldn't surprise me at all. Well, in order to do that, you have to start picking them at some point. So once we get into the middle rounds, we just mentioned of those guys that you guys just listed, a lot of people seem to think six or seven offensive tackles could go in the first 33 picks. So once we get through those guys, there's got to be a second tier or that mid-round, second, third-round type of group. So Owen, you did a profile over at Packer Report on one person in particular, small school guy, which I know is close to your heart. So tell me about Ben Bartsch.
Yeah, so I was actually lucky enough to get to coach against Ben Bartsch this season in the Division III semifinals. We were lucky enough to host them here in Whitewater, and we played against Ben Bartsch along with their quarterback, who's a Penn State transfer, who will likely be a rookie camp, training camp guy, if we are lucky enough to have rookie camps or training camps moving forward this year. But Bartsch is a guy, he's legitimate, 6'6", 310 pounds. During the season, I had seen that a Division III guy from St. John's had been accepted to the Senior Bowl, and I thought that was interesting. We had had some St. John's film from nearly playing them the year before. They also played against UW Stout earlier this year, so I had a couple of games on him to watch prior to us playing them, and then seeing him down in the Senior Bowl, and he's exactly what you would expect a D3 guy to look like on tape for a guy that's getting this type of acclaim. He's extremely athletic. He came to St. John's as a tight end at like 6'6", 230 pounds, and then after his sophomore year at St. John's, was convinced by the head coach to move to left tackle. He was going to be, I believe, the third string tight end in an offense that throws the ball about 45 times a game. So he has a lot of experience in pass protection. When we played them, we put our best rusher away from him, which I think is probably the greatest compliment you can give a player when you're game planning against them. I know I spoke to him down in Mobile. He said multiple teams in the conference they play in Minnesota didn't even line up with a guy over him. They would line up with two defensive linemen on the other side and not really rush anyone from his side. So was truly a dominant Division III player. We had seven sacks against St. John's, and none of them were Ben Bartsch's fault. He's extremely athletic. The first thing I noticed down at the Senior Bowl is he moved better than everyone else. Down in the Senior Bowl, it's kind of a fun environment, but you're able to tell those first couple days, they don't wear pants during practice. They just have shorts, and some of the guys with their knee braces are a bit clunkier and louder than others. I believe like Logan Stenberg, who admittedly is a guard, was practicing with Bartsch, and his knee braces were clunking all over the place on every step, when Bartsch's weren't. He kind of glides rather than these heavy feet that you see from a lot of guys, and very impressive. His first rep was against Terrell Lewis in a one-on-one drill. So if you want to talk about five-star recruit to Alabama going against a Division III kid who came to school as a tight end, and Bartsch won. So I think that's something you saw immediately, was that he belonged. He was the caliber of player that everyone thought he was. He hurt his hamstring, I believe, or groin, per his offensive line coach down at the Senior Bowl. So he didn't practice a ton the third day. Or play in the game. But those first 2 days of practice was everything that the NFL needed to see and everything that I needed to see to confirm what I had seen a month beforehand, was that I think Ben Bartsch is going to be, at some point, a starting NFL tackle. I don't know if he'll ever be like an elite player, but he's someone that certainly belongs there. I think that he would be a smart target for the Packers to look at. Maybe at 62, that might be a little rich. I don't know if he'll be there at 94, but he's certainly someone, he fits exactly what the Packers like, and he's a guy that I don't think was very well coached at St. John's. I don't think that's a bit of a misnomer. I think that people think that small school guys aren't well coached, especially at the non-scholarship level. I would argue the opposite of that. But to bias aside, obviously, but that I think he's going to be a lot cleaner of a projection for NFL guys than a lot of Division I guys we saw. Russ was down in the Senior Bowl too. Guys from Texas Tech like Terrence Steele, a guy they'll talk about a little later, and Alex Taylor from South Carolina State, a bit more rough around the edges than the D3 kid. So I think Barch is a guy that wherever he goes, I think he'll be a home run. I think within a couple of years, he could be a starting tackle. But he's someone that's probably, to me, a bit more enticing than any of the top four guys for where you would draft him in this class.
I think I can just turn off the recording now. I mean, I think you kind of went through everything there. So a second or third round pick. Yeah, and that's kind of where you're looking at. If you're looking for somebody to groom into a potential starter, that's kind of where you're starting to look at. I know the Packers have had some good luck in the fourth round, but I don't think that's something that you can necessarily bank on either. So obviously we like Barch. I think that's been established multiple times over that he's somebody that the Packers could certainly target. He fits the athletic profile that they typically enjoy. And they have taken shots on small school guys before. So that's something that certainly doesn't scare them off. So looking into maybe as we start to transition from the end of day two into day three, I know somebody that a lot of people really like is Matthew Peart. And is that somebody that you think is on your radar or would be on their radar?
I think he will be. Yeah. He did well down in Mobile. Zach Bond didn't get a ton of pass rush reps, but he went against Peart both times. He actually beat Peart once, but it was a good rep by Peart too. He's someone that there were a bunch of tackles down in Mobile that I was kind of indifferent about or interested in seeing. And Peart and Hakeem Adeniji from Kansas were like the two that kind of stood out, except Adeniji played guard most of the week. So Peart is someone, he's 6'5", he's 320 pounds, he's got massive arms. He's a guy that I think that was a really good player on a really bad UConn team, and I think he's a guy that in that same vein could be a year two or year three developmental starter with some upside. He is a decent athlete, and again, just it all arms and legs for a big dude. So I liked what I saw from him in the limited a bit that I saw him in person, and thought he looked pretty good on film as well.
Looking into maybe as we start to transition now fully into day three, these would be guys that are a lot more on the developmental side. Again, I don't think that you go into a draft hoping that a fourth through seventh round pick becomes a starter. Sometimes it does happen and it's David Bakhtiari and it works out really well. Sometimes it happens and it's Marquez Valdez-Scantling and it takes a minute. So there's kind of mixed results on that, but I think you tend to lean more towards the it takes a minute side of things. So who are some guys on day three that Green Bay could potentially target, take some swings on some upside guys? I know last year, for example, somebody that a lot of people really liked was Yosh Nijman, and the Packers really were able to get him as an undrafted free agent, which he remains a raw, interesting player. Remains to be seen if they'll be able to keep him around, if he'll compete well in camp and be able to stick around. But who are some guys maybe in that mold that Green Bay could get on day three with some potential upside?
So two guys that, again, were down in the Senior Bowl that I liked during practice. One is Charlie Heck. He's an offensive tackle from North Carolina, played left tackle there, and he is the son of Kansas City Chiefs offensive line coach Andy Heck, who is a name you probably heard of, played for the Seahawks back when he played back in the 90s. And he's a former basketball player, and you can tell that. He switched over to football later in his life or fully dedicated to football later in his life. He's about 6'7" and a half, big dude, pretty athletic, moves pretty well. His issue, though, mostly is that he oversets everything, and that's something where you can just kind of tell he's not super natural at the position yet, still learning it a bit, and is where just his continued technique work and repetitions is what he needs. Obviously, he's got the right person in his life to talk to. His dad is an NFL offensive line coach, but it's just something with him. I think he's really toolsy. I think he's got a lot of talent. I think he could be a starter down the road. But not right now. I think he's a guy that mid to late day three you could take a shot at. Another guy that I liked down in Mobile was Alex Taylor from South Carolina State, excuse me. And another similar story, switched from basketball to football late. He's over 6'8" and a half and is all arms and legs, big long arms and long kind of skinny legs, to be honest. He had like the skinniest ankles, which is kind of something I look for with offensive linemen, just kind of the way they're built. It was very clear he was the leanest and longest tackle down in Mobile. And coming from the FCS, he played really well there, but the consistent caliber of competition that they play can be a bit challenging at times, and he's someone that I think that is a project in every meaning of the word. Probably you would take him and hope to practice squad him for a year, and then even after that, a year or two before he would likely be able to contribute. But it is someone that is worth keeping around. And then the last one is actually someone I think the Packers will target is Calvin Throckmorton from Oregon, who is a guy that played almost every position for Oregon over the last 4 years, was a 3-year starter there, and played right tackle for Oregon. Their left tackle, Penei Sewell, will be a first-round pick next year. But Throckmorton's a guy who's got the position versatility that the Packers like. He's college tackle, who probably likely kicks inside the guard, somewhat similar to John Runyon. I think you could probably make him prove that he can't play tackle first, but I think guard is probably his likely destination. I think that's someone that, moving forward, I think someone like we talked about last week with John Runyon is someone that you would just move inside and keep inside. I think Throckmorton is maybe a bit more able to maybe survive a tackle if you need him to get you out of a game. So that's another guy that is really technically sound, will never be the most physically gifted dude on the team, but he's a good guy to have around in that offensive line depth area. So those are three-day-three guys, pretty different types of players, but three-day-three guys I think the Packers would like and could target.
And that's kind of where, you know, your day three picks, a lot of people are really starting to ascribe to the theory that they're lottery tickets, dart throws, whatever way you want to look at it. Obviously, the team isn't just saying, ah, forget it, throw a dart and hope that, you know, it lands on a guy that they like kind of thing. But at the same time, they're not going into the draft expecting somebody to be a top-tier starter. That's kind of the way that everything works through there. So there you have it. That's kind of just a small portion of the offensive line group, but we have quite a few things on offensive tackles that come through here. It'll be interesting. I really think that it's very likely that if there's a tackle on the board that Green Bay likes, that that will be their selection, especially early. As you start to move later into the draft, it remains to be seen. But again, something we talked about pre-show was that the trends, if you will, of Brian Gutekunst are established to a degree, but there's really only been two drafts. So it's hard to say what he prefers early, middle, and late, to be quite honest. I mean, I know he's had three first-round picks. He's taken one line of scrimmage defender and two defensive backs. That's really not a large sample size for Green Bay and fans, frankly, to be using and saying they kind of know what he'll do. I think you know that he's going to take a high-level athlete, freak show kind of athlete, and then from there, it might be a few different things. They've relaxed on a few different things. For example, if you assumed you knew Brian Gutekunst 2 years ago, you probably assumed that Jaire Alexander wasn't on their board because he was too small, didn't fit the previous threshold. He says now he's right on the edge. So they've kind of laxed those standards at least a little bit. But it's interesting. It'll remain interesting. I think what you can kind of take some solace in is that if you're a fan, Brian Gutekunst isn't going to pigeonhole himself into saying, I'm going to take an offensive tackle at 30, regardless of which one is there. For example, if he has an A wide receiver on the board and a B offensive tackle, I think he'll take the A player. And you can take that for almost any position outside of maybe running back and kicker and punter and some of those positions. But it'll be interesting. By this time next week, we will actually be the night before the draft, so that's exciting. We've got so little time left, and we're finally almost done talking about who they could pick instead of who they have picked. And that'll be the fun part once we get rolling on everything. But we're out of time. I want to give a shout out to Russ Brown. He had to take off early, so we apologize that we didn't get some of his thoughts here. So maybe we'll make up for it next week. But go ahead and smash the follow button, as he says every week, for him on Twitter. And you can follow Owen Reese. He's at Reese Draft. Follow the Packaday podcast. Rate and subscribe. Give us 5 stars. Tell us how awesome we are, because we know we need to feel good about those kinds of things. And you can follow me. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. Thank you guys for listening, and go Pack, go.